Running a call center sales team is definitely filled with challenges, but at the same time, can be very rewarding. There is no manual for how to win the call center sales game, which is why this podcast exists. As your guide, our goal is to help you overcome challenges, discover new tools, innovate where possible, and hear stories from others who have made it to the top of the call center mountain. Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast with your host, Jason Cutter.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to this episode of the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast. So today I have a special episode, which is a replay of me on another podcast. So I had the pleasure of being a guest on the Sales Life Podcast hosted by Marcos and Sunil. And it was a blast. They had a podcast before. They put it on hold. They've come back with a new version that's all about sales instead of just SDR and biz dev. And there was a lot of things they talked about. In fact, it was this conversation that triggered the episode I made for this podcast last week about how to scale authenticity. So I thought there was a lot of things in this that would help your call center and scaling that and building it, and some tips for your sales reps, for your leaders, for management, anything like that. So I wanted to just take that episode, put it here as a replay, and make sure if you haven't already, follow Marcos Serna and Sunil Kumar and subscribe to the Sales Life Podcast, which I'm going to put in the show notes here so that you can follow them, follow that show, support that, and just help anybody and everybody who's trying to make a change in the way sales is done. Here is the episode that I was on. Enjoy.
In today's episode, we sit down with Jason Cutter, CEO of Cutter Consulting Group. You're going to learn the A to Z of sales as we cover many topics from prospecting to negotiation to closing. And really what is awesome about this episode is Jason's unique approach on how he coaches his sales reps to be what's called a sales success architect by making your buyer the hero in your sales process. Ultimately, this is going to lead to larger contracts and closed won deals. So you're not going to want to miss this episode. And like we say here, your success is our success. So let's get started.
From the heart of Silicon Valley in beautiful San Francisco, California, welcome to Sales Live Podcast.
And we are back on another episode of the Sales Live. Today we have a very special guest, Jason Cutter. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. I am super excited to be here. And always anything to talk about sales, I love it.
Oh, that's great. That's music to my ears. And for the guests at home that are, you know, just tuning in, or, you know, diehard listeners that listen every week, we have Sunil Kumar, who's going to be our new co-host. Sunil, also, like, welcome. I just quick little intro on yourself, maybe for the audience. That'd be great.
Yeah, thank you very much. So I am starting to co-host the Sales Life Podcast with Marcos. Recently founded a company called Trainio, of which me and my partner Omar Sadiq run. And a bit of imposter syndrome. I was one of your original guests, so it feels weird to be on the other side of this, but I'm enjoying it.
That is true. Yeah, that's right. We got Sunil. Hey, shameless plug for that episode. Go check it out if you're looking to get hired. Sunil is like an absolute master when it comes to that. But we're really excited, Sunil, that you're co-hosting. Now, as far as Jason, right? So obviously, you know, a lot of the audience knows you, but for those that aren't familiar, maybe you can just give a quick introduction on yourself, kind of how you started in sales and what you're doing today.
Yeah. So working backwards is always a bit more fun to put it in perspective, especially I was thinking about it after you said that was music to my ears about, I love talking about sales. Cause I am a author, podcast host, trainer, coach, consultant. I consider myself a sales success architect for the companies that hire me to help them build a successful, scalable revenue operation. And I went the path that, you know, not very many people did to get where I am. And I got a bachelor's degree in marine biology from UC Santa Cruz, and I tagged sharks for years. The funny punchline with that is that literally the result of my upbringing and how I felt about people led me to choose sharks over people as the safest and best way to go in life. Tagging 18-foot great white sharks was a better thing to do than deal with humans. I did not have a great childhood when it came to other people. So when people see me now, they think, oh, you've probably been in sales your whole life. Like my first sales job was until I was 27, and it was in the mortgage business, and it was the height of the real estate boom. And we were just order takers, like literally just order takers. And I had to learn sales on my own years later when dealing with people in foreclosure and then running call center teams. And so it's been a long evolution. In fact, I've run away from sales many times in the past 18 years, just literally because I didn't even think I wanted to do it. And I just keep getting drawn back over and over.
Wow. I mean, epic, like, wow. From the start all the way to now, like, I am curious, like, I may ask you, like, random fact, like, towards the end, like, you know, what it was like, you know, to be face-to-face with that great white. That sounds pretty intense. But one thing that I really picked up on there was a word you said, which is sales success architect. So curious and learning more about that and kind of how that fits into like authentic persuasion.
Yeah, I think when we look at it from a sales operational level and an organizational level, most companies that I've seen, and I won't get into all the details, otherwise this will be a very long episode, but most companies think, I want to do sales, I need a sales team, or it's led by a founder who is a salesperson. They think, if I just hire some salespeople, give them some leads or point them in some direction, they'll know what to do and they'll just go sell, right? I consider that playing at sales. I think a lot of companies are playing sales in the same way that, you know, you go to the YMCA and you play some pickup basketball, then you're just playing basketball, right? You're just having fun. You're goofing around. The challenge is that organizations and salespeople are playing pickup basketball at the YMCA, but expecting NBA contracts and getting paid millions of years for messing around. And they're, I'll say it, and it might trigger people, very unprofessional. They don't do what professionals would do, which is having a system and knowing why they do it. And so many other things that then fit under, you know, why, what I wrote and, you know, what I made into Selling with Authentic Persuasion, which is what the book is. But as an architect, I see the fact that if things are put in place within an organization in the sales operation, it can scale. It can run like a business should. The challenge is that most people in sales don't like structure. They don't like systems. They don't like processes. They want to do what, let me do what I do best, man. Like, don't give me a script and don't give me any structure. Just let me do and say whatever I want. And that's not how you can successfully grow anything, by having a whole bunch of renegade cowboys playing sales. Does that effectively trigger all of the audience?
Probably, right? yeah. How do you scale authenticity, though? That's interesting. How do you build that into a process?
So I think one of the biggest things is understanding authenticity and persuasion together, and authenticity being that individual needs to understand who they are, why they're in sales, what they're after for themselves, and then what their role is in sales and how to use their strengths and be who they are, right? I'm not like you. I'm not like Marcos. I'm me. Now, a lot of people in sales, like, oh, I've got to act like this, right? I've got to act like Wolf of Wall Street and sell me the pen. And that's how I'm effective in sales. But if that's not true for you, it will never last long term. You're not a professional actor. And even that, you can't be on all the time. And so how you scale that is having a team that understands their role is to be authentic and persuasive, and to get that customer to move forward once they qualify. And their goal is to have a conversation with another human and help that human who's scared and confused and worried make the right decision. And then the scalability as an operation comes around that, which is, okay, how do we support them on that one mission and then give them all the tools around them and make it so that they're doing and saying the right things for the organization and for the customer? It's authentic, but like, you have to do things a certain way so that we do it. I mean, it's similar to you know, a lot of that scalability stuff comes down to, if we look at like McDonald's, I call it McDonaldized model, which is, it might not be great hamburgers, but if you go anywhere in the world and get McDonald's, it's the same. And it's made by people who are entry level, minimum wage, whatever. They're not rock stars. They're just following a process. And so you take those bits and apply it to salespeople and let them do what you need them for, which is talking to humans.
Well, that, you know, really does resonate with me, because I would say just personally over the past 1-2 years, I've gone from trying to copy others and how other people do things, you know, the top performers in the office, to just go, I'm me. And if I'm authentic, people empathize with that and it just works better, right? So what was your moment? Because I'm sure probably a lot of our audience are in similar scenarios. What kind of made you go, oh, did you struggle at first, or did you just get it right away? Were you offended?
Oh, no, I was an absolute hot mess. So bad. So here's one thing that I've realized, right? Like, so I got my first sales job in 2002. I call it a professional sales job. I worked in restaurants. You know, I did a little bit of retail, but like nothing where the goal was to actually persuade somebody. When someone comes into a restaurant and sits down, you don't have to persuade them to order something. I mean, you could be good and get them to buy more, but they're there to eat. So it's not rocket science. Since 2002, I've realized that I have never received one moment of sales training at any company I worked at prior to becoming a consultant. I had a job. I was in the mortgage business, and then I was self-employed. And then I got hired as by a company as the director of operations, so much so that I didn't think I was a salesperson. They put me in operations because I wanted to be in operations, because I didn't think I was a salesperson after 4 years of being in sales. And then they fired the VP of sales. And then I got moved over to VP of sales and ops, and they assumed I knew everything. And so then I was in charge. In the beginning, I, even as an order taker, I made so many mistakes. One of the biggest things is that I am naturally analytical, and I made the classic mistake that so many salespeople make, which is they sell to people like they like to buy. They follow the golden rule to the wrong extreme, which is, hey, if I like facts and figures, I'm going to assume everyone likes facts and figures. So let me sell through facts and figures, right? I see the other extreme. Oh, I like to buy because everything is fun, and I just want someone to show me the fun things and take me out to happy hour and schmooze me. So I'm going to do the same thing to everyone else. That also doesn't work because everybody's different and people buy differently. And so I used to think everyone wanted stats and spreadsheets and options. And I would give people 10 options, and then they would disappear in analysis paralysis and put their head back in the sand. And I would literally lose deals to perfect clients by shooting myself in the foot. I also realized, like, I was order taking. And when I actually had to persuade people, I had to learn what that was like. And that was so difficult until I realized, like, what it took and how, you know, to ask questions and then try to solve problems and really empathize with people, but then realize, like, people are messy and unpredictable.
Yeah. So something I think that resonated there was everyone's different. Every sales cycle is different. Right. And so I actually listened to another podcast where you're talking about, you know, you want to do things that other sales reps don't do, right? And so I am curious. I want to break down this a little bit, but yeah. I'm wondering if you're kind of getting at, like, you know, for me, I'm totally different than you, who's different than Sunil. So is it kind of really hone in on your strengths and what makes you great? And then when you're reaching out to prospects, kind of show those, or how do you go about that?
Well, and going back to the line that you dropped there kind of in passing, it's actually the number one piece of advice that I give people when they push me for an instant answer, how to be more successful at sales. My one go-to response, because there's no one answer, right? That's, I can't be the authentic persuasion dude and be like, okay, here's the one way to sell. Like,
yeah,
that's authentic for me, but not for everybody, right? There's a framework, but there's not a say this one question, do this one thing. Like, there's no one thing for every scenario. There's principles, there's fundamentals, but there's no one thing. But the one piece of advice I tell people is, when in doubt, just do the opposite of what you think a salesperson should do. And the emphasis is on what a salesperson should do, because here's what we all know, and here's what I know, is that by the time someone enters a sales role, like a professional career sales role. They have been a customer in their life. They have bought from somebody who is a salesperson. It didn't go well. They didn't feel good. They have a bad impression of sales. I will say that currently around the world, most people have a negative impression of sales and salespeople. Sales is a dirty word, which I'm working on changing through salespeople with authentic persuasion, but sales is a dirty word, right? Look at the fact, and you know this, you're laughing, both of you are laughing, but look at the fact, look at what companies title their salespeople instead of calling them salespeople, right? Business development rep, account executive, right? Like you're a salesperson, but nobody wants to say they're a salesperson.
Yeah, no one wants to be like, oh yeah, what do you do? I'm in sales, you know, like.
I'm in sales, I'm a salesperson. Hi, I'm Jason, I'm in sales, I'm here to sell you something. Like, no, because you know that's like such a negative thing and you're just putting yourself backwards in the conversation by admitting to what you're actually doing. And so again, my advice is to do the opposite of what you think a salesperson should do. And most of the time when a salesperson is selling, it's all about them and they talk all the time and they talk about how great they are and how amazing they are. And so don't do that. When you're doing cold outreach, don't sound like a telemarketer. Hi, Marcos, my name is Jason. How are you today? Like instantly all the alarms go off that I'm a telemarketer, that I'm trying to sell you something, because that's how they sound. Like just be a human, be yourself. What you're asking about the authentic side is you want to bring those strengths. You want to be who you are. That's so important because the three of us are different. Your listeners, everyone's different. They got a different personality. When I call people, I'm totally different than you guys. And you have to know that. And the other part that's important, which is the key in what I was talking about, is you also have to understand that we all every human thinks that they are the center of the universe at some level. Now, some people are better about not being self-centered and selfish in every way, but by default, as humans, we've survived and thrived on this planet and dominated for good and for evil because we only think about ourselves and care about ourselves in a group. But at the end of the day, it's all about ourselves. So here's the challenge is that salespeople, we all, myself included, only think about ourselves and we see the world through our eyes and we think that everyone is the same. When I'm on the freeway, I don't understand why everyone is driving slow or stuck in the left lane in my way. I don't get it, right? Because I think they should all get it. Why don't we all get it? And the same thing with sales. Like we think everyone wants this or we want that. The problem is you got to remember your customer, the potential person you're talking to, they also think they're at the center of the universe. And so when you think you're the hero and they're the hero, there's only one hero in the story and you're going to lose. And if you try to give them what you think they want, but it's only true for you, you're gonna lose.
Yeah, that's really insightful. The hero. I'm a big word of like, you know, big fan of picking out words that resonate. Be the hero, right? And so maybe we can start getting into some like tactical advice, you know, for yep. the audience. So when you're saying like be the hero in a deal cycle, right? Like what does that look like from an account executive that's trying to close like, you know, 6-7-figure deal? Be the hero, right?
So the key is to remember that again, everyone sees themselves as the hero of their own story, right? Which is generally, it's true, but it's also not true. Most people are role players in life. They're not the hero, but your customer is the hero in their mind. And you have to remember that and not put that in jeopardy at any moment. And again, B2B, B2C, the fundamental thing that's true is no matter who you're selling and what you're selling and the deal size, it doesn't matter. You're dealing with another human, right? That is a human. It's not B2B, B2C, it's H to H, right? It's human to human. You're dealing with a human. That's who you're dealing with. So you got to keep that in mind. And that's why these principles apply. They have to always feel like they are the hero. And you have to make sure that they understand that you are the guide, not the hero. Where salespeople fall into the classic mode that doesn't work is where the salesperson makes them and their company the hero in the journey, about their logos and their testimonials and their social proof and their monologues and their all these things, right? Like their slide deck, their brochure. It's that is meant to make the salesperson, the company, the hero in the story. And again, you can't have two heroes in the story. It doesn't work. You have a hero and a villain. You can have a hero and a guide, but you can't have two heroes. Just doesn't work. And so you have to just always remember that your role in sales is a guide. Your role and your job, you have one job, and that's to help them make it over the finish line successful. Help them feel safe. Help them understand and trust you, right? That's where the social proof and the logos and the testimonials come in, but only at a certain point in the conversation where you need to show them that trust. Once you understand you can help them and they understand that you care, and then you're the guide helping them there. And again, it's all about safety. It's all about helping that person feel safe. Bigger ticket, six-figure, seven-figure deals, B2B, that kind of stuff is even more challenging because there's so much more safety at risk for that buyer than even just a consumer buying a car.
And Jason, how do you make someone the hero? How, you know, what tactics do you use to do that? And I'm going to break a rule here and double stack a question. How do you challenge a hero? Right? I'm a fan of challenger sales. Would you do that?
I think it's actually really easy to make them the hero or get them to be the hero. The easiest thing is just don't screw it up. Because again, remember, the default in all of our minds is that we are all the heroes, right? And so as long as you don't do anything to upset that balance, they will still think they are the hero and they're on this journey. And if you look at classic stories, it's the hero's journey. A lot of people in sales, they think they're Luke, but they're Yoda. Right? They need to be Yoda. They're not Luke. The other person needs to be that. So it's part of it is just make sure they're always feeling the hero. And then how do you do that and challenge them? Well, really the key is that in that discovery, probing, question asking phase, which is so vital, it's literally the most important part of any sales cycle, sales process, conversation. It's where you should spend all of your time until there's one piece of information that you have. That's where you're going at it and finding what you need to know that is relative to what that hero wants and why. And then that's the path that you're taking them on, right? It's not, hey, I just want to go climb that mountain. Why do you want to climb that mountain? Like, why is that important to you? What is it about that? Okay, once I know that, here we go. Get ready.
So I do have a follow-up to this, right? I love the hero. It's kind of like a champion, right? But I like the hero a little bit better because it personalizes them and makes you only really, you know, maniacally focus on them. Curious as far as like, what are some tactical strategies you would use to make them the hero? Are you like showing them, are you like giving them a one-page executive briefing that makes them look good so then they can share that to their manager and then that kind of helps them? Or like any like quick like tips and tricks that you can give to some of the sellers out there?
I think it's a couple of things. One is, you know, it depends on where you're at in the conversation, the deal cycle.
Of course.
Yeah. Right. So one of the biggest things is you've got to understand when you're going through that first process, the questions and discovery, probing, whatever you want to call it, you need to know what they want and why that's important to them and why they need or want what that is. And we're talking about B2B where they're going to have to go most likely get approval from somebody else, right? If we're looking at that level of complexity, why is that important to them? Why is it important to the organization? And at the deepest level possible, the problem I see with a lot of sellers is that they're on the surface, right? A lot of sellers are in love with what they sell. They have totally drank all the Kool-Aid. They think what they're selling is amazing and everyone should want it, right? I'm going to break it to you. It's the 18th CRM that they're not going to use and they don't need. So it's not that special to them until you figure out why they need it. And again, a lot of salespeople, they ask some questions, they check some boxes. They think everyone loves it. I'm going to do this demo. I'm going to give you this one pager. This should go really well. But you got to get really deep and it helps them realize that you care about them. And what we talked about earlier, it's totally different. So that's part of it. Then having them be the hero, one of the things is they can't falter. They can't mess up. The hero wants to make sure they are safe and successful. So when it comes to that one pager, how do you align what your solution is with what the company needs and wants at a total level, right? Not just what it's going to do for that person, that marketing manager or that VP of sales or whatever it is that you're selling, but like for the whole organization, what is that impact such that when that person is taking that up the chain, they are the hero. The other thing, and this is really important, and this is where I learned this lesson when I was doing B2C sales and dealing with people mostly in debt, is that there's always somebody you think, okay, that's totally different, Jason, than six-figure, seven-figure deal cycles, right? It's not, because no matter what you're selling, they always have to answer to somebody else and they always have to justify to somebody else. So think about this example, right? I'm going to tie this in for everyone so you can understand it. Is think about a time where either you bought a car or you saw someone buy a new car, super excited about that car. Let's talk about yourself. Buying a new car, super excited, got a great deal, can't wait to show it to everybody, right? Then you show it to a bunch of people and there's that one person you show it to, family or friend or coworker. And they're like, well, how much did you pay for it? Oh, I paid, you know, $35,000 more. Oh, you got ripped off. You should have paid less and you shouldn't have got the extended warranty, right? And they just crap all over your thing. And so you're no longer the hero and now you're embarrassed. So what I learned back in the day dealing with business to consumer and people in debt was that if I'm talking to, let's say, the husband about their finances, and I know that the spouse, the wife, is going to be involved, if I just arm him with information, he's going to go to her and she's going to be like, no, you're not signing up for another thing. You keep doing that. That's why we have these problems in the first place. Stop doing this, right? And he is now knocked off hero status. So what I always did was I was like, let's get on the phone together. And then that way they can ask me questions and I deal with this all day and I'm happy being questioned, yelled at, whatever, I can take it. And so not only do you in any sales cycle, but what you're talking about, you want to be their guide. You want to be their guide next to them on that trail. So it's not like, here's this one pager, go do it. It's let's set up a phone call so you can preserve their hero status and you can take all the beatings because you can take it and then help them move up the mountain along. I know that wasn't a short answer for it, but I think it's a really important tactic.
It's good. And Sunil, I you probably have a question, but I just had one interesting thought there. Well, two. One is you getting, like, in this scenario, right, the wife involved, that's you kind of getting towards like the economic buyer, you're building consensus, right? So I could see that. It's a good strategy. But the other part that I thought was interesting was like something that I'm a big fan of in deal cycles is like giving homework, like small like things, take, you know, 2-minute survey, 3-minute survey, right, for them to like help you. And so you challenging your customer in that way, right, B2C, whatever, and saying, hey, bring your wife on that call is a good kind of qualification. Like, are they really serious or are they not serious about buying your product, right? Is that kind of what you were getting at there too?
Yeah. So partly them being involved in the process. Gotcha. And being along there with me. Also the fact that I know until that deal is done, I haven't successfully led them up the mountain as their guide. And so if that's the case and we're not done yet and I send them off, either go home or go talk to the CEO about this, I am sending them into battle without finishing my training and somebody will die. Right? Like if we think of like a Star Wars movie, right? It's like halfway through the movie, Luke thinks he's all trained. I don't need Yoda anymore. Like I'll go do it myself. And then he gets beat. And it's like, okay, no, you're not ready yet. That's the same thing. And I know it's funny, but like when you think about all these movies and the hero's journey, you think about your role, you need to make sure you keep them safe every step of the way. And you're right there with them. Don't send them off on their own. Because that's where I see a lot of sellers go wrong, is they go, here's a one pager. Here's how to be a champion. Go talk to your boss. Let me know how that goes. Did you get it approved yet? And they're toast.
Yeah, because there's those unhidden buyers that they never introduce you to. That's so interesting though.
And they're not strong enough. They're not ready enough. They're not on board. If they were on board and they were totally capable, they literally wouldn't need you. Right? That's the fundamental thing, is that if a company is ready to go, they know what they want and everyone's approved, that conversation is easy. That conversation looks totally different in the first couple of phone calls, which is, we know we need a new CRM. We're ready to go. We're unhappy with this. Here's my budget. What is this going to cost? I'm ready to go. We've seen those. It's rare, but we've all seen those.
Yeah, I agree. So Sunil, any questions here? If not, I have another one, but I want to give you some time.
Go ahead. You're asking them before I do. Go ahead.
I'm just curious by nature. That should be like my, you know, like quotes, Marco's curious by nature, Serna.
Yeah.
but all right. So for the sellers out there that might be in a, you know, more of a strategic deal, right? End of quarter, whatever, they're trying to close it. And they think they have a champion. They send over this deck. You know, what advice? But the buyer's not buying, right? It's kind of in a weird flux state. Like, what advice would you give to that seller today, right? And how can they try to? Obviously, it's a lot harder, right? Because, you know, you don't know the context. But let's just say, for example, like you're in a deal cycle, everything's going good. He sent over champion's deck. He sent over pricing, and then it's kind of stalled. You know, what advice would you give to the seller?
So first off, understanding that you're never going to close all the deals that you want, all the proposals you send, all the decks that you send, all the pricing, it's just not going to happen, right? Like nobody's 100%. Short term, maybe. You could have a good month where you're like, hey, I sent 10 proposals. I got 10 approved. Like I got 10 checks, right? But sales is about failure more than it is about success when you look at the numbers, right? Like if you're amazing and closing 30, 40%, you're still losing 60, 70% of the time. And depending on what you're selling and the leads that are coming in and the sale process and the cycle that you're doing, you're probably not even close to 40%. So I say that because I think it's important to put that out there where you're going to have those times, like no matter what I've done, no matter the salespeople I've coached, the companies I've worked with, like there's just deals you can't control because you're dealing with another human and they're messy and unpredictable, right? Everything lines up on paper. Everything is amazing. And life, that's it, life. Just happens. Like there's just life and things go on. So that's the first part to always remember. And it's not a get out of jail free. Like you don't have to try. It's just, I'm aware there's deals literally makes no sense. I call it the prospect witness protection program. Like something goes sideways and they literally, it's almost like they changed their name. They've gone off the grid. They moved to another country. Like I you just don't even know what happened to them. So with that being said, one of the biggest things when I hear that and when I see that, like it's the perfect situation. You send over this champion deck, you've sent over the quote, the proposal, it fits, even offering a deal end of the quarter and they're not responding. Most of the time what's happened is that seller has messed up well before that point in time. And that's the case for long sale, short sale, B2C, B2B. There's something that was missed. And I mentioned it earlier when you're doing that discovery process, like why do they need what you're selling? Why do they want what you're selling? How does that impact them at the deepest level possible? Again, most sellers are playing a surface game, right? They're spending very little time or the questions they're asking are very surfacey and they just think like, okay, cool. You've got a problem. Okay, I'm going to solve it. And they're not at the deepest level. And the reason why I say that is the issue. And I wrote about this when I wrote Selling with Authentic Persuasion is that if people aren't doing what they said, the homework assignments you mentioned, the follow-up, if you're stuck in this follow-up trap, then in like literally nothing's happening, it's because they don't know why they want it. And most likely you don't know why they want it. And so nobody knows why they want it at the deepest level, which means you're just hoping. You're hoping that the moon and stars align where they realize, oh yeah, that's right. I need to buy this and sign up for this. But most of the time, sellers I see don't do that. And their follow-ups are weak. And I don't mean like from a volume standpoint. I mean, there is that, but usually when you get to a certain deal point, like people are following up incessantly. It's what do those follow-ups sound like? Hey, I'm following up. I wanted to see if you got the proposal. I wanted to see if you were able to talk to the CEO. I wanted to see what happened, right? Like just checking in instead of tying it into what that person wants and needs and then creating the urgency from there. based on why they even wanted it in the first place.
Perfect. So do you ever use storytelling at all, Jason? Because I've always been a fan of using that to build authenticity. And also, it's a very easy route to finding a hero, right? And kind of forming that in their minds.
Yeah. So it's funny because I in these conversations, as soon as you ask storytelling, I'm like, have I even told a single story? I don't know. So like when I'm in like teaching mode, I don't use a ton of stories. When I'm in sales mode or working with salespeople, I think stories are important. One of the biggest things, and I wrote about this as well, and I train people on this, is third-party stories of people in similar situations as that buyer. Not just here's the logos and here's what we've done, but a company like yours and a person in this role did this, right? Like I'm a huge fan of, okay, so I think this is going to be a great fit for you. Last month, I was working with a marketing manager at a company similar to yours. Here's what their challenge was. Here's what we did. And again, showing that you helped someone else successfully get up the mountain as that guide, I think is the key. Because again, the fundamental thing, and stories help people feel like they're not alone. And the reason why that's important is because I said, everyone thinks they're the hero of their own story. We're all selfish and self-centered. That's how we survive. That's how we get through every day, is by making sure we don't screw up and pick the wrong berry. Like thousands of years ago, picking the wrong berry would kill you. So we're focused on us. And we are a tribal society. So, and we have gotten to this point on the planet because we've worked together. And if you didn't work together, you got kicked out of the tribe. And so people need to know that if they make a decision, they are going to be safe and it's the right thing to do and they won't get kicked out. I firmly believe this is why most people's number one fear is public speaking, because they don't want to be ridiculed. They don't want to be embarrassed. They would rather die than public speak, because dying, all the problems are done. Public speaking means you might get kicked out of the tribe and who knows what would happen then. And so when we're talking about the stories, it's about showing them that other people in the tribe made it. It's why, you know, the testimonials are important. It's why, you know, many people, I'll say most people, you go to Amazon to buy something, you look at the product, scroll right to the bottom, read what people said. Were they safe? Like, it sounds silly and ridiculous. Did they survive when they bought this, or were they embarrassed and are they going to get kicked out of the tribe? And when we're talking about sellers of higher ticket things, again, I mentioned this earlier, they have to feel safe as a person. They have to feel safe in their role, because so much more is at risk. If they make the wrong decision, then they could lose their job, which is then going to trickle down to other things. And then stories are very good to show them you're not alone, because nobody wants to feel alone in their problems or the solution. Most people don't want to be the first, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does to me. And I don't know if this is in your book, but do you have like a blog called The Hero's Journey, and then mapping out like like four or five things on what the journey looks like? Because like, man, this is like just so insightful. That would be very valuable.
I don't have it called that, but what I have done is I've taken what's in the book that I wrote about somewhat, but then I've developed it more in the training and the speaking that I do. And it's called The Authentic Persuasion Pathway. And it's essentially the five parts of every sales conversation that I know are important. And again, universal principles like rapport and empathy and trust, things like that, that have to be in every sales related conversation. And that's what I focus on. And if anyone wants a copy of that, I know we're going to share my contact info at the end, but I have some stuff around that I share with people just so they have it. And the one thing to keep in mind, because again, we're talking about long sales cycles, every conversation you have, let's say phone call, right? I'm not talking emails and texts, every phone call, video conversation you have with a prospective buyer, no matter your sales cycle, each one of those is a self-contained sale. There is a rapport, there's some empathy, there's some trust building, there's some action steps, right? There's something, there's a deliverable, there's a close, there is an opening and a close. What is a close deal? Well, close might be the next appointment. It might be them having a call with the boss, like together. It might be them doing the survey that you're talking about or submitting more information. There is a sale that you want made on every single call that you have with someone in a long sales cycle. Most salespeople think, oh, I already did rapport. We already built some trust. I'm good. Now let's just close for the next, 14 phone calls, right? But each one is a sale.
That makes sense. Sunil, did you have a question? Sorry, I didn't see you.
Yeah. So I just curious, because would you ever extend this to cold outreach? I mean, it's how do you do that, right? Like in social content, in email, cold calling, how do you build authenticity off the bat?
I think it's a couple things. One is, and I'm a huge fan of this, and I learned this years ago, it goes back to what we talked about early on, which is just do the opposite of what you think a salesperson should do. Just do the opposite of what you think a cold email should do, right? Most people think, oh, I'm going to send you this email. Here's all about me. I'm so amazing. You're going to want to do business with me because I'm amazing. People don't care, right? Like that's not what they care about first. They care about that, but not first. So when you're doing cold outreach, when you're doing cold emails, think of it the same way you would do a phone call. You need to do some rapport. Then you need to ask questions. You need to understand, can I even help you? And I want you to know that I care about you. That's why I call the second step in my authentic persuasion pathway empathy. It's the discovery, it's the probing. But when you do it the right way, people feel like you care, right? Like even if we look at this interview, you guys asking me questions makes me feel like I care. It's funny because I wouldn't say this is artificial, but we know the scenario. You ask me questions, I answer them. You ask me questions, I answer them, right? It's one-sided, but it feels like you guys care because you want to know these things, right? And that feels good. Same thing when you're doing outreach. If it's LinkedIn, if it's calls, if it's emails, it's all about the rapport. And then it's about, can you help that person? What kind of situations are they facing? And this is what I'm a big fan of, calling it like it is. Hey, my name is Jason. You're not expecting this call. It's a cold call. If I get 60 seconds of your time, I want to see if you have a situation I might be able to help with. And then go from there, right? I just want to see. Like, if I can help you, I'll let you know. If I can't help you, I'll let you know. But just calling it like it is and being a human and doing the kind of things that you would want if someone called you that you would be receptive to.
Mm. That's so interesting. Sunil, we need to do this in our outreach now. It's do what a normal cold email would not be. So
that's
I love
it.
It's good advice.
The opposite of a cold email is opposite. To be the subject.
Yeah, like so many key words here, but the opposite stands out. And just kind of wrapping it up right before we move into our last segment, which is like rapid fire outro questions. I just like really resonated with this podcast a lot. Being the sales success architect is like kind of shifting my mindset, and I think will shift a lot of people's mindset, because with that you'll have that hero's journey. I love that. I know you have a different word for it, but the hero's journey just really stands out for me.
Let's go with it. Yeah.
but moving into our rapid fire outro questions, first question is typically the hardest, but do you love to win or do you hate to lose?
You know what's interesting is, and in thinking about this too, I think I'm really in the middle. And I know that might sound like a wishy-washy, like political answer. Like I just can't decide. It really depends. If I am playing something and I do the best that I can and I don't win, I'm okay with that. If I get beat, if I beat myself, I hate to lose. I hate to lose when I screw it up when I'm doing anything. That could be sales, right? Like if I'm wanting to sell somebody and close a deal and I don't, and I know I screwed that up, I hate to lose, right? The need to win is not more important. I mean, I like to win, but it's usually if I know I'm good at something, I know I'm going to win anyway. So I'm not even driven by the win. I'm just driven by myself.
And what about books? Obviously, other than your own, what do you read in your spare time or podcasts? What inspires you?
So podcast is really easy. One of my favorite ones, it's called The Quote of the Day Show by Sean Croxton. It's super easy. What I love about it is he's so genius. I'm jealous about his podcast style. He takes clips of motivational speakers and has that on the show every day. And they're just short. They're like 10 minutes. super quick, super easy. And otherwise podcasts, it really depends on what I'm into, depends on what I'm struggling with, depends on what I want to get better at. Sometimes it's psychology, biology, sometimes discipline, it's goal settings. Sometimes I'm literally going for a walk in the morning. I'm like, okay, what am I struggling with? I'll Google it and then find a whole bunch of podcasts and just go down a rabbit hole. So that is really part of that. Books, I'm always balanced between speaking because I'm working on my professional speaking career. So getting better at that, as well as personal development. I read a book called Obstacle is the Way recently, which is about that obstacle and that thing you don't want in the way is actually the way. And it's the thing to get over it and get stronger. I mean, it's like no pain, no gain, right? Without going there and working out and hurting yourself, you can't build more muscles. So it's a lot of that. I have a book on my shelf called The Road Less Stupid, which is a great book, especially for people who are doing a lot of things, small business owners, big business owners, leaders, anybody with lots of ideas. It really is about focusing down on less things and doing them well.
Wow. I'm definitely going to look at that quote of the day podcast. That sounds like that would definitely interest me, but yeah, obstacle of the way as well. But hey, last question, where can people reach out to you, find you? Are you on LinkedIn, Facebook? Like what social channels are you on? And do you have a website, all that stuff?
So social, the main one is LinkedIn. So if you just go there, Jason Cutter, YouTube channel. So I'm putting out a lot of videos, broadcasting the lives that I do every week, as well as from my podcasts. And then I'm somewhat on Facebook, more of a business page there. And then the best thing as a central hub is jasoncutter.com. So if you go there, it's literally like a link tree for everything that I have going on, from the trainings, the programs. Email me, jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com. Like I mentioned earlier, I have some guides. I have some eBooks that I'm happy to send out. Just mention this show. I'm happy to send you anything that I can to help. And when in doubt, I am still the number one ranked Jason Cutter on Google. So if you Google me, I think I own the first 3.5 pages currently on Google. So you can find everything that
way. Wow, that's a mad SEO right there. Can you give us some tips?
2 years ago, I had a guest on my podcast in the early days, and he was the number one Rob Howes on Google. And I looked at myself and I was number three. And I hate losing more than I want to win. So I was pissed. And so I decided to do, 400 podcasts and 70 guest appearances last year, and that fixed it. So
that's wild. Well, hey, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Maybe we can come on your podcast. That'd be great. Share some wisdom. But Sunil, any last questions or anything you want to say to Jason?
Just thank you. I learned a lot, and I'm glad to be connected.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yep, likewise. Thanks for having me, and welcome to the show, Sunil.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah.
Awesome. You. Well, thanks, Jason. Appreciate your time today. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to Sales Live Podcast. If you like this episode, please share, comment, and subscribe. Tune in to next week for a brand new episode, and have a fantastic week. And I'd like to remind you, if you'd like to be a guest on Sales Live Podcast, please reach out to your host, Marco Cerna, on LinkedIn. Profile link is in the description.
Did you get some inspirations of ways to help your call center sales team win bigger, stronger, and faster? Hope you are fired up to scale your sales operations. If you got value from this podcast, please go in and leave a rating and review. Also, make sure to forward this episode to anyone else you know in the call center space. We appreciate your support in growing the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast family. And if you have any comments, ideas, or feedback, contact us at cutterconsultinggroup.com.